It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And away we go, episode 817 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 30th, 2024, and we now have the official list of undrafted free agents for the Commanders. They, on Monday afternoon, officially announced the signings of 11 undrafted free agents, 11 UDFAs, 11 UDFAs, if you will. Three Commanders UDFAs to be aware of in particular. Notre Dame quarterback Sam Hartman, USC running back Austin Jones, and Colorado State defensive back Chigozie Anousium. The Commanders reportedly gave significant money, as UDFAs go, to Hartman and Anousium. Hartman would appear to have the inside track to being the Commanders QB3, but we'll see. The team also has Jeff Driskel and Jake Fromm, in addition to, of course, Jaden Daniels and Marcus Mariota. Hello and welcome to this Tuesday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. Speaking of Jaden Daniels, he, as you may have heard, is a big part of a Commanders draft class that is getting rave reviews. Next segment, I'm going to speak with NFL and college football analyst Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report and the Draft Network. Ryan used to work for the Redskins. He is great at talking NFL draft. He is a Commanders fan, and he is going to drill deep on the Commanders picks in the 2024 NFL draft. Lots on the LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels, but also a lot on Illinois interior defensive lineman Johnny Newton and Michigan corner Mikey Sainristil and Kansas State tight end Ben Sinnott and TCU offensive tackle Brandon Coleman and Rice receiver Luke McCaffrey and Temple linebacker Jordan McGee. A good number of these guys could make instant impacts. Ryan will explain why. Also on the show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats on Monday evening concluded a four-game series. The O's on Monday evening began a four-game series, but each team won. The Nats won at the Miami Marlins 7-2 for the Nats' first four-game sweep of a regular season series since September 2019, and the O's shut out the New York Yankees 2-0 at Oriole Park at Camden Yards to move ahead of the Yankees for first place in the American League East. Before we get to some feedback, we on Monday afternoon did get some more intel on what the Commanders did with their number two overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft. It has been said that the quarterback choice for the Commanders actually came down to Jaden Daniels and Michigan's J.J. McCarthy, and that North Carolina's Drake May was behind both Daniels and McCarthy in the eyes of the Commanders. We got some more on this from ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter in his appearance on the Pat McAfee Show on Monday afternoon. Take a listen.
You know what's funny about the Jim Harbaugh stuff? Like last week in Detroit, I'm watching ESPN and they got these odds shifting on whether the Chargers will draft J.J. McCarthy. Like, where is this coming from? Now, the interesting part about
that was on your network, Schefter. Yeah. That was on your network. That would be you.
Well, the odds were going way up on it all of a sudden. For some reason, by the way, we were talking about, you had me on from Ann Arbor two Fridays ago, and the odds on Drake May gone up. And the truth is the Commanders, the two quarterbacks they had in consideration at two were Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy. So Drake May wasn't going to. Oh. He just wasn't going. He's going to go three to New England.
All right. Now, Adam Schefter did say something similar to that last week, but some more from him on Monday afternoon on the Commanders' monumental quarterback decision having actually come down to Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy, not Daniels and Drake May or Daniels, McCarthy, and May. The commander said, no way, to May. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from one of the many legal experts of this show, Neil Mullen. He is an adjunct professor at George Mason's Antonin Scalia Law School. Neil practiced labor and employment law for 3+ decades. He is a big Commanders fan. He is a loyal listener of this podcast and writes, Neil, about our great guest on Monday's show, episode 816, NFL draft and college football analyst Thor Nystrom of Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros. The mighty Thor. He gave us an excellent breakdown of the Commanders' top picks in the 2024 NFL Draft in explaining why he gave the team an A for what it did in the draft. Writes Neil, highest question to answer ratio in pod history. I think you asked 3 questions in a half hour. Great stuff. Thor never really explained why he had Brandon Coleman as a guard. Bewildering to me. Coleman played 41 games at TCU. 36 of them were at tackle. Dude looks like a tackle, measures out like a tackle, has insane reach for a tackle, much less a guard. And Adam Peters not only said that the team sees Coleman as a tackle, but explained why. And yet people still are saying, yeah, but he's a guard. Thank you for the email, Neil. Thor Nystrom on Monday's show gave us some very detailed answers, but that is a good thing. Thor is an NFL draft expert. He is super passionate about the NFL draft, and so I don't at all mind him talking as much as he did. My goal when I have someone on as a guest, especially someone as knowledgeable as Thor, is to ask direct and hopefully concise questions and then just get out of the darn way. Not that I'm a perfect interviewer or anything like that. I'm sure that I can be better, but the idea is to ask about the things that people listening most care about and then let the guest answer. Let the guest cook. I'm not a fan of hosts constantly interrupting and talking over guests. Not that there can't be back and forth between the host and guest, but the point of having the guest is to shine the spotlight on that person. A guest segment is about the guest, not about the host. And Neil, in his email, of course, was only kidding. He raises a good point about Brandon Coleman. Here are the facts about Coleman, who the Commanders took in the third round of the 2024 NFL draft with the number 67 overall pick in the draft. Coleman is super athletic. He registered a relative athletic score, an RAS, a RAS of 9.98 on a scale that goes up to 10. That ranked number 4 out of 1,450 guard prospects from 1987 through 2024. Now, why the guy who created RAS, Kentley Platy, had Coleman as a guard and not a tackle, I'm not sure, but whatever. Coleman is very athletic, and he, in his collegiate career, played a lot of left tackle. Coleman, in his 2023 senior season, made 11 starts with 7 at left tackle and 4 at left guard. Coleman, in his 2022 junior season, made 15 starts all at left tackle, and Coleman was good. He, in his career at TCU, allowed just 54 quarterback pressures and just 3 sacks over 1,307 pass-blocking snaps per Pro Football Focus. So I am with Neil. I don't quite get viewing Brandon Coleman as a guard. As a guard, as Jay Gruden said of Brandon Sheriff during Jay's time as a Redskins head coach. Jay, are we about to put Brandon Coleman at guard?
Yeah, we're getting there. But, you know, we've had, what, 2 first-round picks since I've been here. One of them hasn't played a down or played one game, and the other one's a guard.
Yes, he's a guard. that was Jay talking about receiver Josh Doctson and guard Brandon Sheriff. Perhaps guard is where Brandon Coleman ultimately winds up, but the notion of him being a left tackle in the NFL Is that some far-fetched dream? Feedback on the Capitals is their 2023-2024 season ended with a 4-2 loss to the New York Rangers at Capital One Arena on Sunday night to complete a four-game sweep in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Email from Philip C., the PhD, on the Caps power play, which was terrible in the series. The Caps in the series went just a 2-for-17 on the power play, and the Caps in the series gave up two shorthanded goals, writes Philip. Former NHL player and coach Daryl Sutter had a short list of rules. The Sutters were the first family of pro hockey, with no fewer than six brothers in the NHL at various times, and I believe that Daryl now has a nephew in the Caps organization. Here's how the Caps needed to apply three of Sutter's rules on the power play. Rule number one, get the puck in deep. Instead of trying to skate past the gauntlet of Rangers at the blue line, dump the puck in, and then follow a second Sutter rule, be strong along the boards. Winning battles along the boards is one of the main objectives in hockey. Once you have outmuscled the opposition along the boards, then follow another Sutter rule, be hard on the puck. That is, be aggressive, skate through the opposition, and gain control of the puck. Then you can set up the power play and find the open man who results from the man advantage. Thank you for the email, Philip. And Philip is right. The Caps do have a Sutter in the organization, as is said in hockey, Riley Sutter. The Caps took Riley Sutter in the third round of the 2018 NHL draft. He is a forward. He, in recent seasons, has been playing for the Caps' AHL affiliate, the Hershey Bears. Email from Court in Los Angeles, writes Court, "Hey Al, it's Court from LA. I used to call your show all the time when you worked for a certain station that we shall not mention. Just wanted to say that I always love hearing you cover the Caps. You know the Caps will always be my first love. No one covers them like you. I love this time of year. The spring of 2018 will always be filled with great memories. I remember calling your show from LA during the wee hours of the morning, waiting to get on the air. It was great listening to you and Peter Hassett of RMNB talk Caps hockey. Keep up the great work, and let's go Caps." Thank you for the email, Court. Peter Hassett, co-founder of the great Capital site Russian Machine Never Breaks. So he joined me on episode 809 of this podcast. I remember my conversations with Court fondly. Our conversations on The Morning Blitz with Al Galdi, a show that I did weekdays from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. And then I got moved to another show as part of the 4 million lineup changes at the station. Even though The Morning Blitz show was profitable and the show was generating major download numbers. You know, it's one thing if you get moved off a show because you're not getting the job done. You're not generating an audience. You're not making money. That show was generating an audience and was making money. But I digress. But that show did serve as the foundation for this podcast. A lot of what I do on this podcast started with that show, The Morning Blitz. But great to hear from you, Court. Well, Court may have pulled all-nighters to call into my early morning radio show. But if you're planning a big event, you do not need to pull an all-nighter to find the right catering service. Just get with Catering by Uptown. Catering by Uptown is the best catering service in the DMV. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. If you are planning a wedding, a party, a corporate event, whatever, you want great service, but you also want a great price. Well, Catering by Uptown provides both. Catering by Uptown is a family business, and it specializes in handling everything so that you don't have to. Catering by Uptown understands that special events deserve to be celebrated in style. Catering by Uptown takes care of every detail so that you can enjoy your event. from putting together and executing a menu to picking linens to selecting an excellent florist. Catering by Uptown is committed to meeting your needs and exceeding your expectations. Great service, amazing cuisine, and reliability are the foundation of what makes Catering by Uptown one of the most referred caterers throughout Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Northern Virginia. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, please consider following the podcast if you're not already doing that. Following the podcast is free. If you have an iPhone, you can follow the podcast simply by tapping the plus sign in the upper right corner on the page listing the recent episodes of the podcast. Grades for what teams did in an NFL draft in the immediate aftermath of that draft are fun and interesting, but of course, only mean so much. You can't truly know how well or poorly a team did in an NFL draft until multiple years after that draft. That said, something that I always enjoy is the coming out of the GPAs for NFL teams for what they did in an NFL draft. This guy, Rene Bugner, he for years now has compiled the GPAs for teams for what they did in NFL drafts. He computes a GPA for each team for each NFL draft based on the draft grades from major experts. His GPAs for the 2024 NFL draft are based on 20 different evaluations. So there is a wisdom of crowds element to this. And the Commanders are number 4 in the NFL in GPA for the 2024 draft. The Pittsburgh Steelers are number 1. The Chicago Bears are number 2. The Philadelphia Eagles are number 3. And the Commanders are number 4. The Commanders got 14 versions of an A and 6 versions of a B. Now, it is worth noting that the Redskins were number 1 in the NFL in GPA for the 2019 NFL draft, and that Skins draft ended up not being so great. So you can only take these draft grades so far. But what the Commanders did in the 2024 draft is being very well received. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the Al Galdi podcast, Ryan Fowler, who is an NFL and college football analyst for Bleacher Report and the Draft Network. Ryan also is the host of a Commanders podcast, Commanding the Huddle with Ryan Fowler. Ryan used to work for the Skins. Ryan was an intern for the Skins from August 2018 to May 2019, and then was a staff writer for the Skins from May 2019 to July 2020. You can follow Ryan on X at underscore Ryan Fowler underscore. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Al. Always appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you coming on. Before we get into the specific players who the Commanders took in the 2024 NFL draft, what are your general impressions of what general manager Adam Peters did in this draft?
Yeah, first off, Al, I'm extremely impressed. You know, the first go around, if you will, right, for Adam Peters in Washington, he got impact players, not just on day one, of course, with Jaden Daniels and the top 3 picks, But as you move forward into day two with guys like Brandon Coleman, Ben Sinnott, Mike Sanders, still is one of my favorite players in this entire class, Al, pound for pound. And also on day three with a guy like Jordan McGee, who's going to fly around and hit people, as is Dom Hampton, I could not be fundamentally more impressed with what I've seen from Adam Peters, not just in this draft process and free agency, how he's changing things out there at Ashburn for where things have been so stagnant here, I feel like, for so long, for decades on end. You sit here now just a day after this thing. Now, as you said, we have yet to see them strap up and wear the burgundy and gold yet and compete on Sundays. But I'm really excited to see this young group and build here in these next few years in Washington.
Something that I really liked about the Commanders 2024 draft is that they pretty clearly abided by the philosophy of best player available, which to me is the best way to do the NFL draft. Adam Peters in his press conference this past Saturday night very much endorsed the BPA philosophy, although he also has said that a team does an NFL draft while balancing both BPA and need. But does it feel to you like BPA was how the Commanders did the 2024 draft?
I think they absolutely did, Al. I was a major push for Drake May at two overall. He was my QB2 in this class. But I think you saw that as you moved into day two with Johnny Newton, a guy that was a top 15, top 20 player on my board and across the industry. And yeah, the fit may be questioning as far as with Daron Payne and John Allen, but at the end of the day, the Phil Mathis pick has not worked out in Washington. People forget that. And as exotic as Dan Quinn wants to get within his front seven, you got to get guys that can push the interior consistently. And Johnny Newton is going to draw attention away from guys in John Allen and Daron Payne and allow him to be consistently unique with his alignment versatility. One tech, three tech, five tech. It doesn't really matter what he's going to be able to do along that defensive line. So I'm extremely impressed again what they did. BPA specifically, you can even see it on day three, adding another linebacker that is in that similar role of that Frankie Louvu type of body type with Jordan McGee at 225 pounds. So I'm right there with you. BPA is a fine way to approach this thing, especially as you get into day three where you got to get guys that can compete right away.
As we know, nothing from what the Commanders did in the 2024 NFL draft matters more than what they did last Thursday night, taking LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick. You just said that you had North Carolina's Drake May as your QB2 in the draft. So did you have Daniels as your QB3?
I did, yes, right alongside JJ McCarthy, yes.
Okay, what's your outlook for Jaden Daniels as a Commanders quarterback?
Yeah, I think the one word really, Al, that describes Jaden Daniels is electricity. Now, I do want to see him continue to work in his mechanics, increasing more torque in that lower half, consistently dissecting the shallow to intermediate areas of the offense and being a quarterback within that structure early on in his career where young quarterbacks are going to have to win. But as far as what you look on the outside with finally getting a guy for Terry McLaurin, hopefully, I know we've said that last year with Sam Howell, hopefully Terry McLaurin finally gets his QB1 in Washington. But I think the vertical shots that they're going to take, Zach Ertz, Ben Sinnott over the middle of the field. And then, of course, you add a guy like Austin Eckler in this offseason to take a little bit more pressure off of him. And then, of course, the additions that they've made along the front five. Jaden Daniels is someone where I know you can get a little spoiled with looking at my league neighbors, Brian Thomas, and even the tackles that they had at LSU. They're going to be first-round picks next year, Al. But what he's going to do immediately is he's going to keep every single pair of eyes on defense honest at all times. And he's going to expand a playbook. And you can't just locate one guy here, and say this is a throwback type of athlete at the position, because he will burn you in a second and he's out the back door for a 50-yard touchdown. So I'm excited to see him. He is not the perfect prospect. None of these guys are. Coaching and development remains extremely important. But he is the right guy, I feel like, for this offense, for Cliff Kingsbury. And Washington flat out got their guy at second overall.
What are your principal concerns with Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, as I mentioned just a little earlier ago, Al, it is just winning inside of structure. I know we get so excited with the vertical shots, the big arm, and the legs outside of structure. I know there are comparisons out there with Lamar Jackson. That is not a good comparison for me when you look at Jaden Daniels. Lamar Jackson will stop on a dime, spin around that defensive end, then accelerate in space. Jaden Daniels is a lot like Robert Griffin III, that track linear speed, outrunning pursuit angles, which is fine, but they are different types of ball players. And when I look at Jaden, just win inside of structure and develop as a young quarterback that can dissect the intermediate areas of the offense inside the hashes, again, early in his career. Because there is a difference between being a thrower and a passer and a flat out quarterback. Because again, vertical shots, they are going to be in this offense, but there's a reason why they drafted Ben Sinnott, and there's a reason why they drafted Zach Ertz for those high leverage situations, high leverage downs, even a guy like Austin Eckler out of the backfield to create more mismatches. It's just doing the little things well, taking what you can get, consistently move the chains, take care of the football to where you're not just dropping back as well and just throwing it downfield, trying to loft it into the likes of Malik Nabers' arms, Brian Thomas's arms. And as well, Al, something that I liked in Drake May's game, there's a difference between being in the pocket and escaping and keeping your eyes up and trying to create throws, or keeping your eyes down as a runner. And then there's a difference also stepping inside the pocket and taking a hit, 300-pound guy in your ribs, or trying to escape outside the pocket. So those are some small things that I want to see in Jaden Daniels' game improve upon early in his in the next portions of his career as a guy that is not going to play at 210 pounds, Al. He's going to play at 195.
Yeah, the thin frame of Jaden Daniels in conjunction with his daring slash reckless running style is a worry for me. Now, the counter to that is that Daniels, over five seasons as a QB1 in college football, was durable. So to what extent is his health a concern for you?
Oh, it's a major concern. Absolutely. And I'm not going to make comparisons to the RG3 frame or even the Emmanuel Forbes frame. But at that lightweight, you know, we talked about last year, 6'4", 245-pound Anthony Richardson, is he going to take care of his body at the NFL level? And he missed a large amount of time in his rookie season because he flat out wasn't able to take care of his body, and he got banged around. Jaden Daniels is going to get hit. You watch that Florida State game or other games in the middle of that year, even the Alabama game, even though it was an excellent game for him, or the Florida game, he took a lot of hits. And it only takes one potentially to change that rookie season or move into year two. And you have to adjust the way you win under center because you took a hit. So again, it's extremely exciting to watch the kid run around, but he's not 220. He's not 230, built like a Drake May. He is 195 pounds is what he'll play at. And it is a major concern. Let's just hope that he can take care of his body and learn flat out how to get down or get out of bounds.
You earlier mentioned the Commanders' new offensive coordinator, Cliff Kingsbury. We still don't have a great idea of what his Commanders' offense is going to be. The new coaching staff also has some serious offensive intellect in Brian Johnson as assistant head coach slash offensive pass game coordinator, and Anthony Lynn as run game coordinator slash running backs coach. What is your best guess as to the kind of offense that Kingsbury is going to run?
Yeah, I think the way that they've built this front five is allowing me to really paint the picture specifically, Al, in the run game. You have wider bodies in their upper half that are going to live vertically. I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of outside zone getting out in space. Now, Brandon Coleman's a high-level athlete. I'm interested to see what they do with him at tackle or guard. I do expect him to start at tackle right away in Washington, but they're going to get after people in the run game. And I know Cliff Kingsbury's, you look at his offense as far as those air raid principles, where you think of air raid and you think, oh, we're living in 11 personnel, we're going to spread it out. Well, look at his numbers in Arizona, and he ran the football with, again, those wider type of bodies along the interior where they're going to move people vertically and allow Brian Robinson to create inside the tackles and live off of the outside hip of both the left tackle and right tackle. So air raid principles throughout the passing game. They're going to take their vertical shots, calculated vertical shots, and they are going to run the football, and that's also going to include specific packages for Jaden Daniels.
We're talking with NFL and college football analyst Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report and the Draft Network about the Commanders' 2024 draft. A complaint from some Commanders fans is that the team in the draft did not go offensive tackle earlier. The Commanders took TCU offensive tackle Brandon Coleman in the third round via the number 67 overall pick. As we discussed, I love that Adam Peters abided by a best player available approach, but should the team have addressed offensive tackle sooner in the draft? And what do you think about Coleman?
Yeah, I was told leading up into the draft, Al, that they were trying to make a trade up and be aggressive for potentially a Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. Obviously, he's now in Dallas, and he'll be their left tackle most likely of the future. I really do like Brandon Coleman, and I think they found him in a perfect spot there on day two because this class, guard, tackle, center, was extremely, extremely talented. And the length stands out for me and the athleticism and the guard tackle versatility. Because you watch this kid at TCU this year, he wasn't healthy for 100% the entire year. He played on a high ankle sprain all year long. So hopefully moving into 2024, he's going to be somebody that I expect, and what I've heard is that the Washington's going to play him at tackle right away on the left side. And I'm going to allow him to compete immediately and potentially start on the left side to this completely revamped front five. But again, it's really the athleticism, its ability to drop anchor against a 235-pound Micah Parsons or a Dallas Turner type in this draft, where you're facing guys in that Montez Sweat, Chase Young type of build at 260, 265-plus pounds in that throwback type of five tack off of the edge. So I really like Brandon Coleman's game. I enjoyed watching him at the Senior Bowl live. He's a hell of a young man, an excellent kid. You know what you're going to get as far as coming into the locker room and being a guy that's going to bring his lunch pail in and just flat out work for you, whether that is at tackle, whether that is at guard. And I think when you look at Washington's board, now I didn't have Washington's board in front of me, but the versatility that you have and that type of player on day two, I love the pick. I love the player. I love what he is on the field, off the field. I think it'd be an immediate impact player for the Burgundy Eagle.
The Commanders, with their second 2024 second round pick, the number 40 overall pick, could have taken Iowa corner Cooper DeJean. They on Friday night instead traded that pick to the Philadelphia Eagles as part of a trade that brought back two 2024 second round picks, the numbers 50 and 53 overall picks. And the Commanders with those picks took Michigan corner Mikey Sainristil still at 50 and Kansas State tight end Ben Sinnott at 53. And the Eagles took DeJean at 40. Would you have preferred the Commanders to have just stayed at 40 and taken DeJean, or do you like turning 40 into two second-round picks?
I absolutely love turning the picks into two, Al. I cannot say enough good things about Sainristil and Sinnott, but I mean, I'll start with Sainristil. If this kid is 2 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier, Al, he's a top 20 lock for me in this class. Now, I'm extremely interested to see what Washington does at nickel. Obviously, Quan Martin, they drafted him last year to play that spot and be kind of that hybrid defender. But Dan Quinn's defense uses a lot of different guys, a lot of different alignments, and a lot of different depths. But I expect Mike, day one, to start at nickel. He is a flat-out alpha on the perimeter. I absolutely love his game. In the run game, flipping and running, he can carry a 6'1" receiver up the seam. He can blow up a screen play on the perimeter. I really flat-out cannot say enough good things about Mike Sainristil and what he's going to be in Washington immediately as a high-floor, high-ceiling type of player. And then what Ben Sinnott's going to be able to do, you look at what the San Francisco 49ers, when Adam Peters is passed with a guy like Kyle Juszczyk or the Alec Ingolds of the world in Miami, and that Sean McVay tree of offense where you have this guy that can play the Y, the F, the H, alignment versatile. Now, I think Ben fights the ball a little bit over the middle of the field at times, but that's something he can work on with his hands. But he's flat out going to get after people in the run game. He has no issue sticking his face in the mud against a five-tech defensive end to seal his back hip. I cannot say enough good things, again, Al, about the Adam Peters draft, specifically on day two, to where you look at this entire class from a 10,000-foot view. And I would not be shocked every single player that they drafted, including Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who I think is going to push the likes of KJ Henry and Andre Jones for a rotational role of getting off the edge there out of Notre Dame. So day two, love Sainristil, love Sinnott, what he's going to be able to do as a versatile piece. And again, cannot say enough good things.
Awesome. I love hearing that. The Commanders receiving core beyond Terry McLaurin has question marks. And so there would seem to be real opportunity for a guy who the Commanders took in the third round of the 2024 NFL draft, a pick number 100 overall, Rice receiver Luke McCaffrey, to make an immediate impact. Do you see McCaffrey doing that?
I absolutely do. And I think you know what you're absolutely going to get from a guy like Luke McCaffrey. Now, he is not the 6'3", 4'4" runner, but he's going to be wide receiver three for this offense. And I think we've tried to kick the can down the road a little bit too long with De'Ami Brown. It flat out has not worked. Dax Milne's not that guy. We've tried it with Kelvin Harmon. We've tried it with the Antonio Gandy Goldens of the world. We got to get somebody in the building that's going to be able to play that wide receiver three spot. Now, Jamison Crowder's re-signed. Are you trying to kick the tires with a guy like Mitchell Tinsley as a former UDFA at a Penn State? We will see. But I think Luke McCaffrey right now has that inside track to be that wide receiver three, to where he's going to be someone on the outside that wins in the shallow areas. He'll be in a further extension of the run game as far as blocking guys on the outside, taking designated touches if you have to, work in those intermediate areas, crossers over the middle of the field. And then also something that goes overlooked with his game is he's going to be somebody that's going to cut his teeth on special teams as well. And I think that's something that's important as you move forward into the middle rounds of this draft. You know what you're going to get from a McCaffrey from a work ethic type of standpoint. He's wide receiver three immediately for me in this offense. And I think he's going to surprise some people.
the three day three picks for the Commanders in the 2024 NFL Draft. Temple linebacker Jordan McGee in the fifth round. Washington safety Dominique Hampton in the fifth round. Notre Dame edge defender Javonte Jean-Baptiste in the seventh round. Who do you like the best out of those guys?
Jordan McGee absolutely flies around, Al. Him and the Dan Quinn defense, I'm not going to say he's going to push Jamin Davis away from snaps, but you turn on Jordan McGee at Temple. I mean, if this kid was at a Power 5 program, I would not be shocked he went in the third round. Jordan McGee, 228, hybrid defender. So it is going to be interesting as far as the projection. Do you play him in the box? Do you play him high? Do you just allow him to roam around a little bit? As a rotational defender early in his career, but he just lights his hair on fire and flat out gets after people. 13 tackles for loss in his career at Temple. So you know he's able to dissect his eyes, the instincts, attack gaps. They want ball players at the second level. You've seen it with adding Bobby Wagner, with Frankie Louvu, even guys like, of course, Mykel Walker. That's going to be a special teams type of addition. But Jordan McGee is an underrated player in this class, and I'm so glad they were able to grab him in those middle rounds as an impact player, again, in multifacets, right, on defense and on special teams.
Final question. You worked for the Skins during the dark days. What do you think about what is happening with the team, with the new ownership in the Josh Harris group and the new front office led by general manager Adam Peters and the new coaching staff led by head coach Dan Quinn and all of these new players? A whole lot of change.
It's a time to be excited, Al. Now, I'm not going to say expect an NFC East title or an NFC title. I'm not saying that, but working towards getting back on the tracks towards relevancy, which has been a problem for this organization, as you know, Al, for decades. And I think you start with this class to where impact players, I believe, on day one, day two, day three, get guys in the building that want to compete and produce and not just wear a jersey and steal a check from ownership. And I think that's what the problem was in the past. So they got ball players in the building now. They got the right people making the right decisions from a football perspective, and they're going to take the right steps forward here. Hopefully down the road, we'll see maybe adding another Lombardi trophy out there in Ashburn, Al.
That would be wonderful. NFL and college football analyst Ryan Fowler of Bleacher Report and the Draft Network. Ryan, great to get your perspective. Thank you, and all the best.
As always. Thanks always, Al.
All right. Ryan Fowler, he puts out a lot of really good content, just like at WSH on the Daily on Instagram. If you are a Commanders fan and you're on Instagram, make sure that you're following at WSH on the Daily. WSH on the Daily just started in 2021 and yet has more than 27,000 followers. The page is soaring in terms of growth, and the page is what its title suggests, daily. The page is updated every day. News, notes, reports, photos, graphics, all having to do with the Commanders. So much good stuff regarding the Commanders 2024 draft. WSH on the Daily is a page that properly sources and vets its news and information and doesn't just post anything that anyone says. WSH on the Daily responds to every single DM. WSH on the Daily is a page at which you could have fun. And WSH on the Daily always has a great fresh look. If you are on Instagram, check out at WSH on the Daily and check out at WSH on the Daily's online shop, WSHOnTheDaily.com. Some outstanding gear, shirts, hoodies, excellent material, modern looks. So for smart, informative, fun, and engaging Commanders content, check out at WSHOnTheDaily on Instagram. And for great merch, visit WSHOnTheDaily.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, the Nationals, for whatever reasons, were owned by the Miami Marlins over the previous two seasons. The Nats in the 2022 regular season went just 4-15 against the Marlins. The Nats in the 2023 regular season went just 2-11 against the Marlins. But the Nats in this 2024 regular season now are 4-0 against the Marlins, as the Nats on Monday evening completed a four-game sweep at the Marlins. A 7-2 win for the Nats for their first four-game sweep of a regular season series since September 2019.
I'm proud of the boys.
Yes, Nats manager Davey Martinez, his boys, they for this 2024 MLB regular season now are back at 500, 14-14. First time the Nats are at 500 since being 1-1. The Marlins for this 2024 MLB regular season now are a major league worst 6-24. The Nats on Monday evening scored 7 runs on 7 hits and 4 walks. The 7 hits were made up of a home run, 3 doubles, and 3 singles. The Nats also worked 4 walks and went 4-for-5 on stolen bases and went 3-for-7 with runners in scoring position. The Nats scored 2 runs in the top of the 3rd, a run in the top of the 5th, and 4 runs in the top of the 7th. CJ Abrams, he on Monday evening as the Nats starting shortstop and number 1 batter, went 1-for-3 with a 2-run homer and 2 walks, and he had a stolen base. Abrams in the Nats 2-run 3rd had a 2-out 2-run homer to right field for a 2-0 Nats lead. The homer was his team leading 7th homer this regular season. Abrams became just the 3rd Nats player since the franchise moved to Washington, D.C. in the 2004-2005 offseason to have at least 7 home runs in a regular season by the end of April. The other two players, Ryan Zimmerman in 2017 and Bryce Harper, who did this 4 times. But Zimmerman, Harper, and Abrams, not bad company. Also, Abrams in the Nats 1-run 5th drew a 2-out walk and had a steal of 2nd base. And Abrams in the Nats 4-run 7th drew a 1-out walk. As for the Nats, 3 doubles on Monday evening. Nick Senzel, he is the Nats starting DH and number 2 batter, went 1-for-3 with a double, an intentional walk, and a hit by pitch. Senzel in the top of the 3rd had a 2-out full count double off the top of the left center field wall despite having been down to the count at 1.12. Joey Meneses, he is the Nats starting first baseman and number 4 batter, went 1-for-4 with an RBI ground rule double. Meneses in the Nats 4-run 7th had a 2-out RBI ground rule double off the left center field warning track for a 6-2 Nats lead despite having been down to the count at 1.02. And Alex Call, he is the Nats starting right fielder and number 8 batter, went 1-for-4 with a double. Call in the Nats 2-run 3rd had a 1-out opposite field hustle double to right center field. There also is this Jacob Young. So he on Monday evening as the Nats starting center fielder and number 9 batter went 1-for-4 with a single, and he went 2-for-2 on stolen bases. Young in the Nats 1-run 5th had a 2-out opposite field single to right center field, a steal of 2nd base, and a steal of 3rd base, and Young scored 2 runs in this game. He was all over the place in this series, as we have discussed. He, for the series, scored 9 runs and had 6 stolen bases. In fact, Jacob Young is the first player to have at least 9 runs and at least 6 stolen bases in a single major league regular season series since the immortal Bob Bescher of the Cincinnati Reds in June 1911. It had been nearly 113 years since someone did what Jacob Young just did. So the Nats offense in this 7-2 win at the Marlins on Monday evening was very efficient, and the Nats pitching in the game was very good. Jake Irvin was the Nats starting pitcher. He allowed 2 runs in 6 innings. He gave up just 4 hits, which were a homer, a double, and 2 singles. He issued no walks. He did record just 3 strikeouts, but he threw a lot of strikes, 84 pitches, 59 strikes versus just 25 balls. The 2 runs that Irvin allowed came on a 2-out, 2-run homer by Jazz Chisholm Jr. to center field in the bottom of the 6th to cut The Nats lead to 3-2. The homer went a projected 414 feet per Statcast. Irvin was coming off a bad outing. He had the Nats 11-2 loss to the Los Angeles Dodgers at Nationals Park last Wednesday evening, allowed 6 runs in 4 2/3 innings. He in that game gave up a whopping 12 hits, which were comprised of 5 doubles and 7 singles. But Irvin on Monday evening was good, and he in this 2024 regular season has been pretty good. 6 starts, ERA of 4.28, a whip of 1.19, but the ERA and the whip are skewed a bit by that blow-up start against the Dodgers. And then the Nats bullpen on Monday evening was perfect. Two Nats relievers combined for 3 perfect innings. Dylan Floro tossed 2 perfect innings, and on just 16 pitches, he tossed a perfect bottom of the 7th on just 6 pitches and a perfect bottom of the 8th on just 10 pitches. And Matt Barnes tossed a perfect bottom of the 9th. This was Davey Martinez during his post-game session with reporters on Monday night, and then you'll hear a follow-up exchange.
Yeah, I mean, the boys play well as a team, which I love. So kudos to those guys, man. We came back this series and played really well. Playing good defense, we're pitching. We're getting timely hits, so it was a good series. So get on a plane and go to Texas, you know, and just continue to play the way we're playing, and we'll be in good shape.
What does it say about the state of this team that, as you said, basically everyone on the roster contributed, this week?
That's awesome, man. I keep saying this, but they keep feeding off of one another, right? If one guy doesn't do it, the next guy is going to get up there and do everything he can to get it done. It was like that this whole weekend. And, like I said, I love watching them play. The energy was fabulous. So we just got to keep going out there and keep playing the game right from the first inning, you know, play for 27 outs. And hopefully at the end of the day, we come out on top.
And next up for the Nats is a 3-game series at the reigning defending World Series champion at Texas Rangers. Game 1 Tuesday night at 8:05. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher. Game 2 Wednesday night at 8:05. Trevor Williams will be the Nats starting pitcher. And Game 3 Thursday afternoon at 2:35. Mitchell Parker will be the Nats starting pitcher. Well, the Nationals on Monday evening completed a 4-game sweep at the Miami Marlins, and the Orioles on Monday evening began a big 4-game series against the New York Yankees at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, and the O's began that series with a win, a 2-0 win over the Yankees, as the O's, Joe Angel, were in the win column.
And the Orioles again in the win column.
Yes, Joe, the win column, and the O's now are in first place in the American League East. The O's for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 18-10, whereas the Yankees are 19-11. The O's are 10 percentage points ahead of the Yankees. Grayson Rodriguez and 3 Orioles relievers combined for a 7-hit shutout on Monday evening. The man known as Grayrod, he tossed 5 2/3 scoreless innings. Now, Rodriguez was not dominant, but the run prevention was there. He gave up 5 hits, which were a double and 4 singles. He issued 3 walks. He only recorded 3 strikeouts, and he did throw a lot of pitches and a lot of balls. 101 pitches, just 54 strikes versus 47 balls, but he was a lot better than he was in his last outing. Rodriguez in the Orioles 7-4 loss at the Los Angeles Angels late night last Tuesday night, April 23rd, allowed 7 runs in 4 1/3 innings. And then the Orioles bullpen in this 2-0 win over the Yankees on Monday evening came through. 3 Orioles relievers combined for 3 1/3 scoreless innings. Not among those relievers was the closer, Craig Kimbrell. He is dealing with upper back tightness. He did not pitch in this game off blowing a save chance in each of his 2 appearances in the 3-game series against the Oakland A's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards this past weekend, a series in which the O's lost 2 of 3 games. But we on Monday evening had the return of CNL Perez. He faced 4 batters and got three outs. So the O's on Monday afternoon announced having reinstated Perez from the 15-day injured list, which he had been on since Easter Sunday, March 31st, with a right oblique strain. And the corresponding roster move to the O's reinstating Perez was them optioning reliever Dylan Tate to AAA Norfolk. But Perez came through. Yadier Cano faced five batters and got four outs. And then Danny Coulomb got the save. He faced three batters and got three outs, came into the game in the top of the ninth with a runner on first, no outs, and the O's nursing a 2-0 lead. But Coulomb retired each of the three batters he faced. The Orioles bullpen is a concern. It has to be right now. But the bullpen came through on Monday evening. This was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his postgame press conference on Monday night on the Orioles pitching in this game. And then you'll hear multiple follow-up exchanges.
We pitched so well against a really, really tough lineup, starting with Grayson. Grayson was absolutely outstanding. Really good fastball changeup tonight. Thought he kept them off balance extremely well. Pitched out of a couple jams, too, against the middle of the order. So outstanding job of pitching. And then great to see C&L Perez back, throwing the ball like we know he can. And then, you know, what can you say about Yanny Cano? Won us the game for me. But just four of the biggest outs of the game against the tough part of their order. And great to see Danny there get three quick outs.
Did you know going in that you would want Coulomb to be your closer tonight?
No, it's just kind of the way I kind of slotted certain guys to certain spots and then certain part of the game, but it was going to be kind of how we did it in September last year a little bit, where it's going to be just committee and have Cano face a certain part of the lineup, give him the tough task, honestly, and then have some lefties there to navigate around him.
If he had retired Torres, were you going to keep him in the game?
No, not at that point. I was bringing Danny in there regardless. A little more breathing room there, getting that second run there. But it's Thorley's pitched a lot already, and I didn't want to pitch him any further than that.
Some really impressive sequencing by Grayson tonight.
Yeah.
Soto and Judge.
Yeah.
On the strikeouts. What have you seen from him this year that has kind of been a level beyond what he's been?
Just better command of his pitches, more experience. When he doesn't have certain pitches, he's got other things to go to. I think Adley did a great job with him tonight. Also, for me, like that last start was kind of just a strange one. It just didn't go his way. But tonight, for me, was more of Grayson of being able to front to back guys, not being able to just sit on one pitch. You know, the fastball's got a ton of life. So when he gets that to the top of the zone, tough to hit. And the changeups, he's got really good arm speed. And threw some nice sliders. So he's got a curveball too. So just think being unpredictable and being able to throw strikes with four pitches.
Yeah, the O's on Monday evening held the Yankees numbers 2 and 3 batters. Former National Juan Soto and Aaron Judge to a combined 2 for 8 with 2 singles. The O's beat the Yankees 2-0 on Monday evening, despite the O's not being good offensively. The O's scored just 2 runs. The O's totaled just 4 hits, which were a home run and 3 singles. The O's did work 3 walks, but the O's went 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position. Both of the Orioles' runs were scored by the team's best player, Gunnar Henderson. He is the Orioles starting shortstop and number one batter, went 1-for-3 with a solo homer and a hit by pitch. Henderson in an Orioles one run first had a leadoff home run to right field for a 1-0 Orioles lead. The homer went a projected 410 feet per Statcast. It was his team leading 10th homer of this regular season. And Henderson in an Orioles one run eighth drew a one out hit by pitch and scored on a fielding error by Yankees shortstop Anthony Volpe for a 2-0 Orioles lead, and that proved to be the final. Game 2 for the O's against the Yankees at Oriole Park at Camden Yards is on Tuesday evening at 6:35. Dean Kramer will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Wednesday show, episode 817. We'll include a lot for you on the Commanders. Also on Wednesday show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats are at the Texas Rangers Tuesday night at 8:05 for game one of a three-game series. The O's are home to the New York Yankees Tuesday evening at 6:35 for game two of a four-game series. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, and I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
Yeah, we're getting there, but, you know, we've had, what, two first-round picks since I've been here. One of them hasn't played a down or played one game, and the other one's a guard.